Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
President Franklin D. Roosevelt addressing the nation December 8, 1941. You've heard it before, and you've heard quite a few Pearl Harbor survivors here on Hometown Heroes. Each one adds a little different perspective on a disastrous and devastating day that cost the lives of more than 2,400 Americans, but also triggered a response throughout the U.S. that would lead to the defeat of not just Imperial Japan, but the Nazi regime in Germany as well. And it can be easy to take this for granted, but if 1940s America and its allies had not come together to repel those tyrannical threats, we would be living in a very different world three quarters of a century later. The century mark is something George Coburn is going to celebrate in October, and today we have the privilege of listening to an amazingly sharp 99-year-old recall what he experienced at Pearl Harbor that day. Born in Minnesota, raised in San Diego, he enlisted in the Navy in 1938, and on December 7, 1941, he was on the third deck of the USS Oklahoma, just below the waterline when that battleship was struck amidships by a Japanese torpedo.
That morning, while I was in the plotting room, I heard the public address system was keyed open, and I could hear a hiss and a little background noise, and then this voice came up and said, "All hands, man your battle stations." And then he came back and said, "Real planes, real bombs, no shit." And it was an officer who said that, and later he explained that he knew that enlisted men used no shit as an exclamation and to emphasize a point, and he wanted to emphasize the real planes, real bombs, but it worked backward because I heard that and I thought, geez, that doesn't belong on a public address system. This must be a bogus announcement total. And I went over to the next compartment. There was an electrician there, and I asked him what he thought about it. And he says, some drunk probably got back from Liberty and found a access to the PA system, decided he'd have a little fun. And then a more authoritative voice came up on the PA system and made the standard call to battle stations and also set off the general alarm. And so I started for my battle station. I made a detour to go to the shop and get a shirt out of my locker, because you didn't go topside without a shirt in those days. And my battle station was in the anti-aircraft director, and so I had a lot of climbing to do to get up there. And the Navy had a rule for everything, and traffic control was you move forward and up on the starboard side and aft and down on the port side. But they had another rule, and that was in the event of an air raid, all unengaged personnel go below the second deck, which was an armored deck. So I got to the up ladder, and they were sending people down, and I couldn't get up. I never got to my battle station. And when the last man cleared the hatch, they slammed it down and dogged it down tight from up above. And so there were probably, about 20 men in this little area where latter, they were all people who had topside battle stations, and of course nobody got there. The first torpedo hit, and the deck jumped, and it was a little bit more of a shock than when the main battery went off. But we weren't unaccustomed to explosions because we had gunnery practice fairly often. And anyway, the lights went out, and more torpedoes hit the ship. I've heard all kinds of numbers on how many there were, and I didn't try to count them, so I can't argue with them.
Is that the first time that it was really real to you, though, when you felt the impact of that first torpedo? Is that when you first knew that this was real and this was war?
Yeah, I would guess that was probably the beginning of realization that we got a problem here. Mm-hmm. One of the things that happened was a source of oil got ruptured, and we got sprayed with fuel oil, and the deck got covered with fuel oil. And because of that, and the ship was beginning to list, people couldn't stand up. And it wound up that a pool of oil formed against the low side bulkhead, and men were slipping into that pool and just wallowing around in oil down there. I've thought many times, if they just thought about it, they'd have figured out how to get the heck out of there, but they didn't. As far as I know, they probably perished right there. And
because they drowned in the pool of oil?
Well, because they couldn't get out of the ship because they were stuck in this pool. And
again, this is in the dark as well. The lights are out. Can you see anything?
I could see a little because somebody showed up with a flashlight, and that was a big help. It helped the guys that were up on the ladder and trying to get the hatch open. It helped them a lot because they were using their fists and or anything they could find to try to hammer the dogs from their tight position. And well, they finally got it open, and everybody rushed for the ladder, and the darn thing broke. I don't know just what happened, but either some fitting came loose or the pin that secured the top of the ladder sheared, because had a lot of men on the ladder, and the deck was over maybe 45 degrees by then, and oil on the deck didn't help the ladder stay in position either, so it just twisted. And somebody had the good sense to yell, "Everybody get the hell off the ladder or nobody will get out of here. It'll break." And people complied with that, and then we went up one by one, and I don't know whether everybody got out or not, but we got up to the second deck and then on up to the main deck, and there was probably 10 of us together at that time. And I looked back, the normal exit from the ship would be out onto the quarter deck, and that was about maybe 100 feet away. There was a big group of men back there. It didn't appear to be moving. And besides, there was all kinds of gear and lockers and bunks and everything that was loose or jarred loose by the explosions had slid down against the bulkhead. And we would have had to crawl or make our way over that stuff in order to get back to the weather deck. I saw an open porthole. Shouldn't have been open. We were at general quarters. If it had been closed, I probably wouldn't even thought of trying to get out a porthole. But I decided that's for me. I went crawled up across whatever was available to get a handhold on, and a few fellows followed me. Some of them went and started going back to the weather deck. And anyway, six of us got out of that porthole. And at the time, the side of the ship was easy to stand on because ship had rolled over far enough to where it wasn't level yet, but it was close to it. And some of the things I should have mentioned. When we were down in the fourth deck and torpedoes were hitting, and we had the light from a flashlight, but no more. Some of the guys were yelling, and some were cursing, and some were praying. And I'll always remember one voice that called for Mama to come and help. He called repeatedly, "Mama, come and help me." And he was in the pool of oil. And
well, what about you? I mean, you're describing this. I know you're a 22-year-old young man at the time. You didn't know this was going to happen. This came completely out of the blue. I mean, it sounds absolutely terrifying. Did you feel that fear? Was there panic? How did you handle it?
I didn't feel any fear or panic, but I think I was in shock. It isn't hard to remember, because I'll remember this those towers forever. I don't know.
And I know there are a lot of other details here, but if you hadn't seen that open porthole, what do you think would have happened to you?
I probably would have died in the ship. Linda has told me repeatedly, says, "You're both lucky and smart." She said, you made a lot of good decisions to get out of the ship, and you also were lucky to have the avenues available to get out. And I have to agree that those two things were big factors.
Well, and reading some of what you two have been working on, I noted the story about the chaplain and that porthole.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't there. A different porthole. We had a lot of portholes.
Yeah.
And anyway, the chaplain, he wasn't a heavy man. His bony structure was such that he had wide hips, and he wouldn't fit through the porthole. I tried to drag him through, and it just wouldn't work. And he stood back and helped push other fellas through. And undoubtedly, by then, he knew that his life was going to end shortly. And but it took courage to behave the way he did and to do something that helped somebody. He couldn't help himself, but he could help somebody else, and he did it.
Is he someone you'd been familiar with on the ship, or no?
Well, I knew the chaplain because his office was right next to the fire control sleeping compartment, and so I would see him frequently, and I certainly knew who he was and what his job was and et cetera. But I was never a church-going guy, so I didn't really know the chaplain.
Well, here's a little that we do know about that chaplain, and I have this linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. His name was Aloysius Schmidt. He was a 32-year-old Catholic priest from Iowa, and he had just celebrated Mass aboard the Oklahoma when that first torpedo struck. Survivors' accounts say that Father Schmidt helped as many as 12 sailors through that porthole that he himself could not squeeze through. In 1942, he was posthumously awarded the Non-Combat Navy and Marine Corps Medal, but that award has since been upgraded. In 2016, the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency was able to identify his remains and finally return him home to Iowa. The publicity around that story produced newfound interest in Father Schmidt's heroism on December 7th. And in 2017, in Dubuque, Iowa, at his alma mater, Loras College, Schmidt's family was presented by the Navy's Chief of Chaplains with the Silver Star. The citation reading, "With unselfish disregard for his own plight, he assisted his shipmates through the aperture. When they in turn were in the process of rescuing him, his body became tightly wedged in the narrow opening. Realizing that other men had come into the compartment seeking a way out," the citation continues about Father Al, as he was known, "he insisted he be pushed back into the ship so that others might escape. Calmly urging them on with his blessing, he remained behind while his shipmates crawled out to safety. In so doing, he gallantly gave up his life for his country." Aloysius Schmidt, one of the more than 2,400 Americans who lost their lives on Oahu on that day of infamy. But we still need to hear the rest of one survivor's story. More with 99-year-old George Coburn when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.